Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And happy hump day, everybody. Good Wednesday evening to you. This is the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 94. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and tonight with me, as usual, is Mr. Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing fine. Down here enjoying this nice weather. It's been in the 80s all week in Alabama, sunny. Got caught up on all my potting and planting and stuff like that, which wasn't easy with broken hands this year, but I got it all done. Right now I'm looking out the window and watching a pair of mockingbirds nesting. Most people don't know this, but mockingbirds nest in low bushes. Most mockingbird nests are no higher from the ground than your waist.
And it's easier right now for them to mock you.
Yeah, I'm watching them feeding the babies in here. We got a ton of mockingbirds around here. But, you know, in Alabama, we don't kill the mockingbirds. You know that, right? Everybody's
yeah.
heard that. We leave the mockingbirds alone. We let them nest and have their fun. But it's also frog time here. I love the frogs. And it's to the point now to where I go out on the deck at night, and it's just a cacophony. Millions of frogs all singing at each other. And, of course, they come up on the deck and they clear all the insects and spiders and stuff out for me, which I like too. And I got one that gets on the kitchen window every night and keeps the kitchen window clear. And I swear he recognizes me. I went out there and looked at him last night, and he looked at me and he went, "Sup? Sup?" That's like, yeah, okay. Good to see you,
yeah.
Frog. So how is it in Michigan?
We had a good run of 80-plus degree weather. Had one day where it hit 88. I went out and mowed the lawn and needed to keep hydrating, getting used to it. It's kind of spring training, getting into shape, getting used to mowing the lawn again. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be out Friday mowing the lawn for the – I think that'll be the third time or fourth time. So I think it's the third time I'll be mowing it this – no, it's the fourth time. It'll be the fourth time so far since spring has arrived. But keeping on top of that, because we've had a ton of rain, had another rainy day today. And when it rains, this grass just grows quick and thick. And it's like cutting hay. It really is. You get out there and you just leave these clumps of grass all over the place. And I hope that they dry out and I can hit them again the next time. But by the next time, it's rained a few more days and it's thick and nasty again. So anyway, that's part of spring up here. I'm one of these people. I love mowing the lawn. I don't have a riding lawnmower. I got a big yard. It's a push lawnmower. It's a 3-hour job, a little over three hours, but it's good exercise. And I got my iPod that's got over 900 albums on it. So I put on the music and just go three hours.
Go. So I got a couple of quick announcements here. One is, a couple of shows back, I promised Joe Conjol, Robert G. Willis-Croft, and Marlena Smith free books of mine. Of the three, Conjol's the only one that got back to me and picked a book. So I picked a book for the other two and mailed all three of them out this week. So if you were expecting a book from me any day now, it should be arriving. And we've also
been talking about
what's going on with Amazon and listing problems and distribution problems with retailers and stuff, and how Lauren spends a lot of time every week working on these. She had a good week last week. She got like every problem solved. She got Willis-Croft's problem solved. She'd been working on Gwendolyn M. Plano. We republished her for Letting Go into Perfect Love book, did a new cover and updated it, and she updated the interior. And we got that thing listed and migrated the reviews and got everything perfect, except for some reason Amazon did not want to put her hundreds of reviews on the soft cover copy. They put them on the Kindle, and they put them on the new Kindle, and they put them on the new hardcover, she didn't even have a hardcover before, but they didn't want to do it on the soft. It took Lauren over 8 months, and she finally got that one solved this week. So kudos to Lauren.
Good job, Lauren. All right, listeners, our guest tonight, we're going to get to her shortly. If you want to call in with a question or a comment, or you want to leave a question or comment on Twitter and be part of the show, We're trying to be interactive. We enjoy an interactive audience. This is how you can do all that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right.
All right.
Now over this on past- Twitter real quick, Verwain Greenhoe, he's already chiming in. Good job, Verwain. Glad to see you out there. Let me see, where did he start here? He's already got three comments on here. He says, Fresh Ink Group, while we are waiting for the show to begin, let me send a big I love you to my wife. Without a doubt, she is the story of my life. Well, good job. His wife is Lisa, so fantastic. He also said, talking about To Kill a Mockingbird or To Mock a Killing Bird, he said, I met Harper Lee in the 1970s when I was taking classes at the University of Michigan. Nice lady, but rather quiet. And then he also is singing Lauren's praises. He said, Lauren fixed my problem as well, and I thank y'all for helping me.
Well, yeah, she had a great week. I don't know what's in the water down here, but something, I want a bottle of it.
All right.
You got one here from Verwain that says, a big thank you to Fresh Ink Group and Stephen G's. And Beam Weeks and Lauren for the help in helping me refit my cover about my dear wife. I remember Judy, a love story. Yeah, I photoshopped his cover for him last night because he updated the interior of the book and the paperback cover he had through KDP no longer fit. So we had to go generate a new template for him, and I just updated his cover for him. It was quick and easy. Always happy to help out a loyal listener, a fan, member of Fresh Ink Group, and all-around good guy, Verwain. Have at it.
All right. So what about the Willis Croft Starfest?
Man, I'm just seeing he's got a bunch more tweets here, too. Last weekend, Starfest 22 in the Denver area was attended by Fresh Ink Group member, science fiction writer, Cold War submarine thriller writer, and writer of other kinds of books as well, Robert G. Willis Croft, and his good friend, science fiction writer, Alistair Mayer, shared a booth at Starfest 22. And last I heard from him, it was very successful. They sold a bunch of books, met lots of fans. They've got a beautiful booth. I'd like to see maybe Robert send us a note about how that went and to share that picture. We'll put it in next week's newsletter. And we really want to start drawing more attention to the things that our authors are doing out there to promote. Because obviously we can't do all that. I mean, we're not a Simon and Schuster where we have a whole floor of people who do that kind of stuff. We just don't have the budgets and the time and stuff. So anything we can do to help support our authors in getting out there, scheduling events, holding signings, making appearances, getting included in other people's promotions and stuff, we highly encourage that. We'd like you to share them. We want to showcase them in the newsletter and show off and maybe give our other people some ideas as well. So congratulations on a successful Starfest 22, Robert G. Willis Croft and Alistair Mayer.
Hats off to you. All right. Fantastic. I see Robert G. Willis Croft. He said congrats to Lauren on Twitter there. So there's that. In a couple of weeks, on June 1st, I'm going to be a guest on the Carters Meet the Author podcast. As we get closer to that, I'll start sharing the link for that on Twitter and all the other social media places. But so I'm going to be doing what Stephen did. I'm going to be on their show. And then as soon as I jump out of there, I'm going to jump into the studio here and start this one. And that should be a lot of fun. And that week, I believe we are doing a part two on Stephen's teaching on point of POV. So you're going to want to tune in for that. And if you want to know what's coming up on this program or all things Fresh Ink Group, we've got a newsletter. I'll bet you didn't know that. Well, here's how you can sign up for that newsletter and stay in the loop.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
All right. All right. We've made a bit of a tradition here of me going over and looking at our print sales when we get on the podcast here to see what our 30-day aggregates are for best-selling print books. And I generally read the top five. It's getting to where it's kind of like the same titles week after week because we've got some that are really flying. Right now in the fifth slot, again, much to my surprise, The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction, which is based in Fayetteville, Tennessee. That's the construction company the author's father and a couple of other people started, grew to be enormous, seven states, multiple countries, and then they got caught up in bid rigging scandals and convictions, and executives were killed in a plane crash. And just a whole bunch of stuff kind of happened, came together in a bad way, and the company ultimately went out of business, and he wrote the history of that, which is also a history of the town and its people and stuff. And I thought, boy, that'll be real popular around Fayetteville, Tennessee, but it's real popular in Seattle. It's popular in Canada, and I haven't quite figured that out, but I will ride with it.
It's an intriguing story. I mean, you might not think it is, but it really is. I read the book, and it's quite very interesting. You know, you're thinking it's a construction company. So what? Well, it's got an interesting story.
Yeah.
They can make a movie out of that. Seriously.
And what surprises me is you got to get over that hump of getting people interested. And
yeah.
You know, how many people go to Amazon looking for, let me learn the history of a construction company, you know? So it just doesn't seem to me that it would have come to the attention of that many people. But it is. They're liking it. And more power to our author, who, by the way, is working on a second book right now. We're hoping to have it out this fall. In the fourth slot, we've got How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida. We're getting ready to launch the website that's going to go with that, the How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Georgia and How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Tennessee are in process, and we're hoping to have those out in about a month. And then we got more scheduled after that. So we're going to start populating this website with a whole bunch of guides to pick from. And right now, the Florida book, the first book in the series, is in the fourth slot. Now, slots number 3 and 2 go to Patricia A. Guthrie, Eerie Charms of the Short Story, Fantasy, Mystery, and Horror. Her hardcover and her softcover are selling equally, precisely the same number of copies for each on my sheet here. And I never see that. Normally, if we can sell 10% hardcovers compared to 90% softcovers, that's a surprisingly good run for a hardcover because it's more of a prestige kind of a book. It's nice to have them on a table at a signing. People who want collector's copies or whatever, they spend the money and they go for the hardcover. But a lot of people, you know, they go for the lowest cost, and the hardcover's not that. So congratulations, Patricia Guthrie. You're still riding high on Eerie Charms of the Short Story.
And that's now, an exceptional collection of short stories. I can attest to that. So get out and get your copy. I'm telling you, if you like well-written short stories, that's got a little spooky factor to it, a little quirkiness to it, and a little bit of humor sprinkled in there, go out and grab you a copy. I'm telling you, it's worth it.
Yeah, I know the guy who edited that book. He's pretty good.
I do, too. That dude's a cool guy.
Yep. that's like I just saw a thing this week where a guy was talking about his friend saw a guy who looked like Jeff Goldblum, went up to him and said, "Man, you look just like Jeff Goldblum." And the guy said, "I don't know who that is. Who is it?" You know, and he said, "Well, he's a movie star." And he pulled out his phone and pulled up a picture of him. And the guy looked at it and said, "Wow, that guy's handsome. Well, thank you for the compliment." And then he turned and walked away. And his friends came over and said, "You know, that was Jeff Goldblum." So at any rate, the number one slot here, this is going to take a little bit of a backstory to understand. Back when we first started Fresh Ink Group as a literary management company 27, 28 years ago, something like that, it was just to handle the literary management, dealing with the agents and the publisher contracts and stuff of my books, and then a couple of friends of mine. And a very close friend of mine who went all the way back to my university days was Dr. Marshall L. Shearer, a psychiatrist who, with his wife, who's also a medical doctor, and she ran the University of Michigan Student Health System and the University of Michigan Health, what do you call those health organizations? You know what I'm talking about. She ran that for the University of Michigan, so she wound up going into administration. The two of them wrote several books together, and they asked me to have my literary thing handle all the deals and the contracts and stuff for them, so we did that. And then once we converted into a publisher, they decided they'd rather we just publish their books for them. So we did that. And we put out three books by the pair of them, and then one book that was his own memoir. And one of the books we put out was called Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication. And this was based on the fact that the two of them for many years ran workshops of counseling for couples. And they were way ahead of their time. They were into, you know, back when you didn't really talk about it so much. They were doing seminars at the University of Michigan on sex and, you know, and not, and just calling it what it is and being frank about stuff back in an age when birth control was illegal in most of the states of this, in this country here. So this book, Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, sold real well, but it was an adjunct to the Shearers putting on this workshop. So they'd order copies of it, and then we would publicize the workshop. We'd sell a bunch of copies, and then other people would see about the book, and then they would order copies too. And that went on for a number of years. And then his health declined, and then he got Alzheimer's, and then we lost him. And they are way past, and she's in her 90s now, retired and living up in Michigan, and they are way past doing seminars or anything anymore. In fact, any of you, if you ever saw over the decades, for 30-something years, they wrote a syndicated newspaper column called Sex Help, and it was distributed by McClatchy Newspapers. And I used to see it even when I was a teenager in the Detroit Free Press up there in Michigan. So they were very famous for that. So when people recognized their names, they had the credibility, and they sold a lot of books. Well, they haven't really done anything in the past 10, 12 years. So we're still carrying the books. We still sell occasional copies. We haven't been promoting them as much as we probably should. And we also had a website for him that got hijacked. So we're in the process of having to rework the website in order to get that back up again. Well, in the number one slot this week, selling more than all the other books combined and then some, is Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, third edition, by the late Dr. Marshall L. Shearer and his wife, Marguerite R. Shearer. And I'm telling you, it's a good book. If you want to learn about relationships and how they work and how to solve problems and the dynamics and all that kind of stuff, it's a good book. And I'm a little embarrassed that we maybe haven't been slogging it as much as we should. And I'm putting that back on my list. We got to pay attention to that. But I can't begin to tell you how we sold so many of those books in this week. And it was this week because it appeared on the list this week. And like I say, the number here is just amazing. So whatever's happening out there, I'd like to figure it out, but I'll take it either way. And those of you who haven't heard of the Shearers or that book, get out there and check it out. It's on the Fresh Eight Group website. It's a good book. So congratulations, my old friend, long lost, Dr. Shearer. I miss you. And congratulations, Guy. Your book's still out there doing some good for people.
And here's a thought. Anybody out there in the listening audience know either Johnny Depp or Amber Heard? Get him a copy of this book. They might be able to salvage something there. Now, as Stephen just said, the Doc Shearer website had been hijacked, and somebody ended up using it for, I don't know, casino gambling in Taiwan or something like that, Hong Kong. I don't know. But anyway, we're intending to relaunch that. Keep your eyes open on the newsletter. You'll get updated stuff on that. It was a really cool website until this happened. Just like I said, keep your eyes on the newsletter.
And by the way, before you cut into the archive, I just want to say a cautionary tale on that is the way that it got hijacked is, you know, you have to buy domain names from companies that do that. The domain name company that we got that from, one of the biggest in the country, DirectNIC, they got hacked and they got into some people's accounts and changed the emails for notifications. So we never got notified that it was time to renew that URL, and somebody else did. And that way they were able to steal it from us. Be careful.
Yeah.
If you bought a domain name from a company and, you know, you haven't gone and checked lately, make sure you have it on auto renew, auto pay, and keep up with that because you never know. Once you lose a domain, you can't get it back.
Did you miss an episode? Do you have a favorite episode you want to hear again? Here's how you can do that in our archives.
If you miss a show, find us in the archives in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com. beamweeks.com and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Yeah, all right. Now, let's move on to our guest. Inspired by nature and human nature, author Betty A. Stevens is a retired elementary and middle school teacher, a wife, mother of two, and grandmother of eight. Stevens lives in central Maine with her husband on their 37-acre farmstead, where she enjoys reading, writing, gardening, walking, and reveling in the beauty of nature. She advocates for children and families, for childhood literacy, and for the conservation of monarch butterflies. Milkweed is the only plant that monarch caterpillars will eat. As of 2019, the author was working on two poetry collections, and we'll find out about those right now. Welcome to the show, Betty A. Stevens. We are so glad to have you here.
Hi, Betty.
Hi. Hey, thanks so much for the invitation to join you. I've already learned quite a bit just listening to your little book reviews and finding out about the list. So that was really neat. But it's great to be with you tonight.
Well, we're thrilled to have you.
Yeah, we had been wanting to get you on for quite a while, and we finally were able to finagle you into the show. So we're glad to have you here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
So how about we start with where are you from? Where have you lived prior to that? And where are you now? We know you're in Maine, but fill us in.
Actually, I've got a whole list here, starting from my birth to present. So started off in New York. From there, at the age of one, I headed out to California in a little old vehicle before they ever had before they had highways going from coast to coast. With my mom and dad, I was a year old, spent 12 years in California, hopped on a plane. We moved back to New York and lived a great deal of my later childhood there, but for the early part in California. So really quite a difference, but, you know, it's really been amazing all the things that I've seen and done. In 1974, Dan and I had two children. Let's see, they were two daughters, ages 6 and 3, and we had a little Siamese kitten. And we decided, it was 1973. That was the year of the energy crisis, when gasoline went from 50 cents a gallon to 65 cents a gallon. Absolutely outrageous.
Oh, the humanity.
And we had to wait in lines every other day, even in odd days, for getting gas. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, I remember it.
So we sold our house in New York, and we were up in the Catskills, sold our house there, and moved to Maine, where we'd been vacationing for many years because we had 40 acres of property up in southern Maine. So we packed up the cat and the kids and everything we could take with us, and we headed to Maine, where we planned to become back to the landers. You ever hear about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, Scott and Helen Nearing, organic gardening, fire books, all of that. So we built our own house without a mortgage. We camped out for 6 months, and it was really hysterical because the building inspector came up. We were camping while we were building, putting the shell up for our home, and it was so funny. He came up and he said, You can't be staying up here. What are you, hippies? You are not allowed to do this. And we said, well, no. I mean, normally we just come to camp. We're just camping while we're building, you know, getting the house built. And so he says, well, sorry, but you can't do that. We just passed zoning. They had just passed zoning. And it was so funny. So anyway, hubby says to him, well, sir, if you got an extra room or two at your place, we'd be love to just come and be your guests while we finish putting up the house.
Yeah.
And of course, he said, no problem, I'll get you the permit, and we, until we could move in. But it was just, you know, it was just so funny. So anyway, that was back in the 70s.
Now, when you say we, you're talking about you and your husband?
My husband and two girls and a kitty cat.
And a kitty cat, okay.
Yeah, a little tiny, she was a little tiny Siamese. We had just gotten her before we moved. But anyway, from there, we stayed in Maine. We stayed in Maine. The girls were grown. We sold our farm there. Oh, we, in fact, you know, our farming years were great. It was the most wonderful place to bring up children. And, you know, we raised sheep. We had chickens. We had ducks. We had turkeys. We had rabbits. Oh, my goodness. And me, I'm a little suburbs girl. My husband, he grew up in New England. You know, he was one of those people, his family knew what growing vegetables were and canning and all that. I knew nothing. I thought groceries came from the store.
Yeah.
And so it was a real experience for me planting seeds and watching them grow. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. So even though I thought, well, you know, I really don't want to live in Maine, before a year was up, I was just so in love with the land and the people that I really didn't care about leaving. So that was our first part in Maine. Then we, it was 1990s, Dan got a job with, Dan had just gotten his degree in business management. He got a job with the Department of Defense, got a job out in California. Meanwhile, I had just went from a business world and got my teaching degree from University of Maine, Orono, and we moved out to California, which is where I started when I was little, got to see all of my relatives. We just rented an apartment out there, and we traveled the whole coast many times, traveled across the country six times, different routes. So we got to see all of America, the contiguous U.S. anyway. And
nice.
It was a wonderful time. From there, he got transferred to Virginia. I went with him and taught there. And by 2005, he had his time in, and we decided we were going to retire. And so we had bought, while we were gone, we bought another farm up here central Maine, 37 acres. That's where we are now, and we're just loving it. So you see, it was New York, California, New York, Maine, California, Virginia, and Maine, and every single part of this USA is beautiful. Every single part. But I'll tell you, Maine has my heart.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've even found beauty in Ohio.
Yeah,
really.
It's hard to
it
do.
Is everywhere. It's a spectacular. It's a spectacular country.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So, Beam, you want to go ahead and roll our first commercial, and then we still have a phone caller.
Yes, we do. So,
okay. Well, this commercial is for Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie, and then we'll see who this caller might be.
Yeah.
Elena Dacani inherits her family's castle in Romania. A land dipped in myths, folklore, and the legendary Walking Dead. The local proverb serves as a warning. Do not speak badly of the devil, because you cannot know to whom you will belong. When she's attacked by an international assassin, only her deceased husband and her ex-boyfriend's live presence can protect her on her journey to the mountainous region of Transylvania. But that's not the only problem troubling Elena. Who is that boy invading her dreams? And what really happened to a priceless gem-crusted silver cross buried by an earthquake in the 15th century? Who's stalking Elena? Who wants her dead and why? Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is a paranormal romantic thriller with a deep mystery and plenty of suspense. It'll haunt you in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats worldwide. Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
A very cool, spooky story.
Yes, that cool guy did the editing on it, so he can tell you it's a great book.
That trailer that you just heard, the video for it is on our channel on YouTube, so go to Fresh Ink Group, check out the trailer, make sure you like, share, put money in an envelope, mail it to us, whatever you're motivated to do.
All right, let's go to the phone lines and see who is on there. Hold on here. Come on. Hi, there we go. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from? Patricia Guthrie.
Oh, hi. I wasn't sure, but I'm calling from Tinley Park, Illinois.
Yeah.
Just outside of Chicago?
That's just outside of Chicago, right. That's right.
So welcome to the show. You got a question or a comment for Betty?
Yeah, have you heard of this Betty A. Steve?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I've known Betty.
What's that, Betty?
Huh?
She said,
hi, Patricia. Thanks
hi.
For calling. I love the intro for your book. Sounds wonderful. Legacy of Danger? Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. The reason I'm calling is because I used to spend my summers in Maine with my family.
Wow.
And I loved, we were in Liberty. I don't know if you know the area Liberty.
Yes,
it's on Lake St. George.
My girls used to go to Circle L Camp in the summertime when they were young, which is in Liberty.
Oh, my. Okay. Good.
Our world.
Oh, it was such a – we had wonderful times up there. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. I just loved it. I have a question for you, though. I was looking you up on Amazon, and I was wondering about this book about hell, Highway Through Hell or something like that.
Oh, that's some other Betty Stevens. That's why, in fact, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked it, because for any authors or new writers, before I published anything, I Googled my name, Betty Stevens, and I came out that book. And I said, well, I don't want to be associated with that. This is somebody else. So that's why I go by Betty A. Stevens. So if you're a new writer, make sure that you Google your name that you want to use.
Yes.
Identify so that you can, you know, make sure that they know who you are. So remember, I'm Betty A. Stevens. I'm just a plain old Betty, but for publishing, I'm Betty A. Stevens.
Well, yeah,
hence the name
Beam.
I've had a similar problem, Betty. There was a Patricia M. Guthrie, who wrote Legacy of Danger back in the 70s.
Wow.
And I don't think she's even still alive anymore. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is. It was bizarre. But I don't
same name and same book title.
I emailed them. I told them the situation, and I'm not. I haven't seen it up there. So, I think they took care of it.
Well, if you go to
good.
A place like Facebook and search a name, sometimes you can be amazed at how many people have that same name, even if it's a little bit of an unusual name. But that advice you gave about searching in advance. Good advice also for book titles.
Very, very good advice.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's why
that
I ended up...
Your haiku.
That's why.
Your main haiku. I loved it.
Oh, you did. Thank you so much. And thank you for the lovely review. You see that I use it very often.
Oh, okay. Good.
When I
read
about the book, because, you know, it's just... Really, you know, reviews mean so much, and I'm so glad to find out that you were actually spent summers in Liberty, Maine. I mean, that's so exciting to me because, you know, you have that connection, so you know what it is, and then you really enjoyed the book too. What did you like? Maybe you could tell the folks that are listening what you particularly liked about the book, if you can recall.
Well. I do like haiku. I'm not used to haiku. I haven't grown up with it, but yours is very polished. It's very nice, and I love the way your descriptions of the seasons and the rivers and the birds and I'm just trying to think of some other things here. I was looking through it before. today. I can't remember any of the particular poems offhand.
Right. Well, I think you've kind of affirmed to me that I did relate what it's like to be in Maine, because
absolutely.
Was, you know,
yes, it did.
Trying to really portray the real Maine.
Yes, you did. And it brought back so many memories.
That's great.
Cool. Now, listeners, to be clear, the book is called My Maine, Haiku Through the Seasons. And that's by Betty A. Stevens. And Betty is spelled B-E-T-T-E.
It is.
Right.
Well, you know, Maine we have 6,000 lakes and ponds, 3,500 miles of coastline, and that doesn't include the 4,600 islands off the coast. Our forest lands take up 89% of the state, which is 17.5 million acres. So no matter where you go, we have one highway. We have one highway, and that's I-95. Of course, we do have Route 1 that's, you know, full of traffic in the summertime. You'll hear some of my haiku. You'll find out about that. But, you know, it's a place where you just feel like you can get away from it all, and yet there's so much here. We have museums, we have theaters, but it's all in a very rural setting. So you have the best of all worlds wrapped up in a state that has just pristine natural beauty.
It sure does. You're right.
Okay. We do have another caller, so do you have any other questions, Pat, so we can jump to this other caller?
Oh, no, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Pat.
Well, yeah, thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Pat. Great to talk to you.
And running your commercial was just a coincidence, too.
Yeah,
it really was.
it was the first one on the rundown.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pat.
Okay. You're welcome.
All right, bye. All right, we're going to jump over here to this next caller. There we go. Click that button. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi. This is Barbara Johnson, B.A. Johnson.
Hello, Barbara.
Calling from Huntsville, Alabama.
Hi, Barbara.
Well, hello, Barbara. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How you doing this evening?
We're doing well. Well.
Great. I am just excited to see that there's another retired educator reviewing a book tonight.
Oh, great.
So what was your inspiration for beginning to write children's books, and were you writing while you were teaching, or did you wait until after you retired?
My children's books I wrote while I was teaching. The first one, which is the Tangram Zoo and Word Puzzles 2, I actually wrote that while I was getting my teaching degree because I had been volunteering in local schools for years. And so I wanted to really combine everything like science, math, language, in a way, history, in a way that was very hands-on. And that book was published originally by a regional publisher. So that was my very first one, but I was right into education at that time. And I've, you know, since done an upgraded edition. But the Monarch Butterfly book, I wrote that while I was, that was during one of our school breaks. It was actually during two or three of our school breaks. I knew that the monarch butterfly, this was Amazing Matilda, a monarch's tale, I knew that the monarch butterfly was an indicator species. This is at the time in the 90s where it really gave you an indicator of how the environment was doing. Meanwhile, while I was a little girl, I used to catch monarch butterflies out in California, put them in jars, mayonnaise jars, and let them go at night. So I had this real connection to the monarch butterfly. So when I heard about its plight, I looked for books about it. I couldn't find one that I would want to use for So I wrote it myself, but I didn't publish it until after I retired. But I wrote the whole thing. I had it in a full, I had it in a binder, and I let the kids in my class, fourth and fifth graders, draw pictures, you know, after when they listened to the story. And I also taught how to write, use it to teach as a writing lesson. So that is my story for those. And the other two, I wrote also, I started Pure Trash when I was taking a creative writing class. And, you know, it was one of our assignments. So I wrote Pure Trash.
That's the one called Pure Trash, the story?
Yeah. I was the oldest one in my class. You know, like I was in my 40s. And these young kids were all in my class, in the class with me. So I read Pure Trash, and they loved it so much. They raved about it. They wanted to know the whole story. So that's how Dog Bone Soup came about. But I wrote that after I retired. But it's just amazing, you know, how your audience can really spark you, you know, into, because I thought it was a good story, but we figure when, you know, 20-year-olds really are so fascinated with it that they want to know more, that I knew that it was a story that needed to be told.
That sounds great. So when you were a teacher, and you were writing, did you let your students read some of your stories prior to publishing?
Oh, yes, I read my story to them. Yes, I read my story to them. They loved it, and so if we had a break, they'd like to read the story in the book and draw pictures to go with it. But as I say, I used that particular story for a lesson in writing. It's a great story to use, you know, for a writing lesson. And I did write a couple more, but I was always writing with my students, and I'm sure you were too. What grades did you teach, Barbara?
Well, I was an elementary principal at the time when I was teaching or when I was in education, but I didn't start writing until after I retired in 2012. So I kind of used my church members, used my young church members to do my beta reading for me as I was writing. But so I did most of my writing after I retired, because principalship was enough.
Oh, that's neat. It was 2012 when I published Amazing Matilda. Oh, and I did all the artwork. With Amazing Matilda, I had everything written, and I tried to find an artist or illustrator to do it for me. You know, do the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Prices were outrageous, so I complained to my daughter about it, and she said, Mom, don't be ridiculous. Just do your own artwork. You've been drawing and painting for years. And so I just did my own artwork.
Well, how fortunate.
Yeah.
I'm just lucky that I have a wonderful artist at Fresh Ink that takes my ideas and just make them come to pass. So I'm fortunate in that way that I have the access to an artist at Fresh Ink, so I'm very happy about that. I'm pleased with his work.
Wonderful. Terrific.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks
welcome.
For calling in, Barbara.
Calling in.
Okay, good luck with your book, Ben.
Always
a
pleasure to hear from you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Sure, thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Now, Beam, you want to roll a commercial, and then we got a couple of things on Twitter.
All righty.
Best-selling author Gwen M. Plano presents The Culmination, A New Beginning, the final book in the Contract thriller series. In the first book, co-penned by best-selling author John W. Howell, the Earth is threatened with a catastrophic event, and Heaven's leadership intervenes with extraordinary measures to ensure the survival of the planet. In Book 2, The Choice, a confidential team uncovers a traitorous conspiracy that has as its goal world domination. The pressing question is, who can be trusted and who cannot? The Culmination, A New Beginning brings the Contract Thriller Trilogy to a close.
After an assassination attempt on an Air Force base in Northern California, tensions mount. Heads of state meet to craft a denuclearization agreement. The meetings between these nuclear powers take a murderous turn. A nefarious conspiracy reemerges and leads the characters into the heart of the Middle East, where they encounter the unexpected and find a reason for hope. Grab your copy now of The Culmination, A New Beginning by Gwen M. Plano. Available worldwide in hardcover, paperback, and all major ebook formats. The Culmination is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Right. Those are some excellent thrillers by Gwendolyn M. Plano. The first one was with John Howell. They co-wrote it. And then the second and third one she wrote herself. Coincidentally, Gwendolyn Plano just tweeted out about this podcast for Betty A. Stevens just probably 10 seconds before we rolled that commercial. So we're really timing our commercials right tonight, aren't we?
Yeah.
But you want to read the question from Joe Congell?
Joe Congell says, "Hi, Betty. Here's a very important question. Who has the best lobster roll in Maine?"
I got to know.
Red's lobster roll. I think they're in Wiscasset or right in the Wiscasset area. Reds.
All right.
Reds. All right.
Yes.
Bring me one back, Joe.
All right. Get back over here to this bridge.
Wonderful for lobsters, but you've got to come for so much more than that. You won't want to leave.
Now, Verwain Greenhoe, he's weighed in on the whole website servers and, you know, getting our one website hijacked. He says, "At my zenith, I hosted over 950 websites on my 5 servers. It was always a battle to keep the clowns out of the servers. We finally wrote a script that began to email us when there was an intrusion. After 2 emails, the server was programmed to shut itself down." Good idea.
Yeah, unfortunately, okay. That shuts everything down. 950 websites.
Yeah, but I mean, it keeps keeps everybody out. And Joe Congell came back and said, "Sounds good. I'll try one when I'm up there. Thanks."
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it shuts everything down, but it closes the door, you know, so to speak. Now, let's jump into your books, Betty. Dog Bone Soup. How did this come about? What's it about? I'm taking it. It's not a book.
Well, now, Dog Bone Soup came after Pure Trash. Is that right?
It did. And that's
So why don't you tell us about Pure Trash first, because then it leads into Dog Bone Soup.
Okay, I'm just going on the list here.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Poor Trash is a story about a boy growing up in rural New England in a family whose poverty and alcoholism make him a target for bullying by both young and old alike. The short story is a prequel to Dog Bone Soup, but it's the Pure Trash itself is a great book for anywhere between middle school age through high school, even on to college, because it just will open up the discussion on poverty in America. And that's a discussion that, you know, we don't like to have, but kids really need to get it and understand the value of people. You don't look at what they have. You look at what they are. Mm. And so anyway, Dog Bone Soup, it's the whole story of Sean Daniels, who's the main character, a poor boy growing up in northern New England in a rural town that is also a college town. So there are a lot of wealthy people that live there. And for poor people to grow up in, to be involved in, you know, in a place where a lot of the elite live, they're often, very often, just sort of targeted. They become targets to the community. And in Dog Bone Soup, as Sean starts out, with the, as we start out in the novel, he's plodding through mounting snow and battling howling winds. He's ready to leave all this poverty, all this bullying behind. He's sick and tired of it. He had a life in foster care, a divorce, the bullies, everything. So if you want to find out, if you want to really find out about the life of Sean Daniels and what it's like to be poor living in a rural community that's pretty upscale, then you really need to check out Dog Bone Soup. The era is the 1950s and 60s, when basically the whole America was at a stage where many people, the majority, were living the American dream right after World War II. And so it gives you an insight into someone who is not able to live that American dream. It's a compelling coming-of-age story. So I think you'd enjoy traveling with Sean Daniels through the guts and glories of his life. So I hope people will, especially baby boomers, will pick this up because it really is a great family book too for families to read together. You know, because you're there again, it opens up that discussion. We have in America today we have such a huge gap between the socioeconomic levels of people. You know, you've got a lot of people that are doing well, and then you've got the forgotten. I think that in colonial America, they called them the mud sill. You know, oh, yeah, we've got to keep people down. Poor people are poor because they don't work hard enough. They don't have education, whatever. You know, there's always an excuse. We can blame them. But you'll find a whole different perspective if you read Dog Bone Soup.
Dog Bone Soup. I loved that book. All the little psychological insights and little wry observations and stuff. And it's really, really good point of view, too. You really get into Sean's head and you understand, you know, what how he feels about all this. And it's an important book, I think. I agree with you.
Thank you very much.
Now, you know, we have an 18-year-old marketing kid on our staff. And I was talking to him this morning. And he was talking about some friend of his was being cyberbullied. And I said something like, yeah, bullying is, you know, timeless. When I was a kid, it was bullying and stuff like that. He was a little bit surprised by it because young people think of bullying the way bullying is done today, which is a lot of very technology-based, you know, hazing people, putting people on social media and sharing pictures they don't want shared and, you know, picking
right
on them through the internet and stuff like that. And I said, no, you know, when I was a kid in the 60s, bullying was a big problem. And help,
yeah,
and always has been and always will be. How was Sean bullied a little differently than the way kids today would be?
Well, I think it was just face to face. You know, he was put down by his peers because he didn't have the money, he didn't have the clothes, and so forth. So there were always little digs. There were always little digs, and particularly the boys had all sorts of things to say to him, you know, to make him feel like he was worthless. But also we have some people there that aren't like that at all. There are some people in the town and in the community that see Sean for who he is, both adults and young people. You know, like the guys at the golf club, when he went working there, you know, the golfers, oh, they would make all kinds of nasty remarks about him not knowing how to shag balls and this and that and the other thing. You know, talking about grown men putting a young guy down. But one of the upscale people in the community who happened to be a novelist, she was there to support him in every way that she could, to support him, to support his family as far as, you know, making sure that he had decent jobs, that he and his brother learned how to enjoy books and reading and knew how to do research. It was really, you know, it's really kind of an amazing book.
Yeah, your empathy for Sean comes through in every sentence that you write in that book. I'm assuming as a teacher, you probably observed a lot of this kind of behavior over the years and and study, notice the dynamics and how it really affects the kids.
Yes, in every class at every age. I taught fourth and fifth, and I taught second language learners in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, and it was very evident. And I was so glad that I was there because, you know, I could intervene as a positive model and a positive person who could redirect any of that to find out the best of every student. What every student is so special, and they all have gifts.
Yeah.
And to help each one to shine, and that it made it in the classroom that, you know, we're a team, and we're going to make everybody in this class shine, and that's what we did. So as a teacher, you know, it gave me the ability to make sure that nobody felt left out or was bullied.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a poignant topic for me, because when I was 12 years old, a friend of mine I went to school with got bullied badly and wound up going home and hanging himself.
Oh,
and
Mom.
To this day, I think of him every now and then. In fact, while his parents were still alive, I used to send him a note every now and then, just let him know that, you know, I've remembered him or whatever. But
yeah.
12 years old, people just don't understand how bullying can affect young people sometimes, or maybe they do, and that's what makes it dangerous. So it's a poignant topic for me, and I found Dog Bone Soup very moving, and I appreciate that from you, Betty.
And I think also, you know, you have to realize that it isn't only kids that do the bullying. And older people that do it because they treat young people different, whether it's because of their dress or what they have, what they don't have. And even teachers, you'll find that there are even teachers, I should not say this, but I've seen teachers that would intimidate people, poor kids and their parents.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a deplorable thing to even think about, but you know, as a society, we have a long way to go in making sure that everybody in our lives, everybody in our communities, in our states, in our countries, that we value them and make sure that they have an opportunity to use the gifts that they have, and that we edify them, we encourage them in every way possible.
Great. So
yeah, I just want to add in here on the whole bullying thing. Yeah, Stephen, you're talking about you had a friend that, you know, was bullied and hanged himself. You know, I went through elementary and junior high school in the 70s, and I remember my dad telling me that if you give a bully that chance to back you down, he will be in your face every day. But if you stand up to him, and even if it means getting your butt whipped, you throw in a few punches of your own, he's going to see there's resistance there. He's not going to bother you because bullies are cowards. And I found that out in third grade. There was this one big kid, probably more than two times my size, Todd. He bullied everybody. One day I'm standing in line waiting to turn in a assignment to the teaching assistant, and he thought today was going to be today. And I had these Buster Brown shoes on, and I kicked him with everything I had in the ankle, and it dropped him right there, and he's crying and writhing in pain. And the teacher from the back of the classroom saw it. She said, "Todd, sit up, get up. Said it's your seat. You had it coming." I saw the whole thing. And I'll tell you what, that kid never bothered me. Yeah, he never bothered me again. And that carried over through the rest of elementary and into junior high, where people said if you mess with him, you know, he might be small, you can beat him up, but you're going to get resistance from him. So I wasn't worth the time. And I never had to deal with bullying in high school. I had a tight group of friends, and we were always together. So, you know, that – you're a little more mature in high school, although there were bullies there. I didn't have to deal with them there. But I'm bringing that up because, as Stephen had mentioned, that Sam was like kind of shocked that there's bullying. He's talking about his friend being cyberbullied. We didn't have to deal with cyberbullying back in the day. Nowadays, kids do, and it's anonymous in many cases. And these are cowards hiding behind a computer because they're scared. They're scared of the stuff that's said on Twitter to people. These people wouldn't dare say it to somebody's face in public. They wouldn't.
Right. Back in the day, it was always face to face.
Yeah.
Yep.
And like you say, you had a great example of your father giving you good advice and you taking it, and that worked face to face.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of Dog Bone Soup and the coach, and with Sean and the medicine ball and all that, the whole business. So it's the same thing. He stood right. He finally stood up. And
yeah.
The coach was happy about it.
Now, on the side, my father didn't tell me to kick him in the ankle. That just for the moment. He told me to punch him in the throat is what he told me. But I was third grade, you know, I didn't know if I could aim it and hit the throat, so I just had the heavy shoes on, and that worked.
love it.
All right, it's time to roll another commercial here, Beam, and then when we get back from the commercial, Betty, we're going to do some rapid fire. We're going to throw quick questions at you and just try to get some, like, one sentence or a few words answered.
We're going to do the poem, too, the poem reading.
Yep, and then we want you to read a poem for us. So
right.
Let's run this commercial. This is for Karen Ingalls' book.
Yes, it is.
Learning about autism, one mother's journey of discovery and love, a charter school, teaching methods, and resources is the book millions of families must have. Carol Tucker travels the road of autism and cerebral palsy with her adopted son, Justin, now a young man who routinely astounds physicians with his achievements. She is a special education teacher, recognized leader in children's advocacy, and one of the founders of Florida's first charter school for autism, where she served as director. Through photos and stories, best-selling author Karen Ingalls shares Carol's journey, then offers a wealth of resources, teaching methods, school choices, and financial assistance options. With Karen's unique insight, learning about autism shows how one very determined mother and her family can rise above daunting challenges to thrive and find happiness. Learning About Autism is published worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions.
All right.
We're going to be rerunning the episode of the podcast that had Karen Ingalls promoting that book and Carol Tucker, who the main character, the main person the book is about, who raised the autistic son. She was a guest on the show, too. Since then, Carol Tucker has passed away. But we're going to be rerunning that on June 8th, and that's an excellent episode, especially if you're interested in learning about autism. Make sure you tune in.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Okay, Betty, we know about your two grown daughters. Quick answers. How many years you've been married, and how many grands and great-grands do you have?
Okay, been married for, let's see, how many?
If you need help, yeah. I've got it written down here.
I think it's 57 years.
57 is what I've got.
Or I can't remember anymore. I have to figure it out. A long time, more than half a century. And we've got... five grands and three little great grands.
All right.
Lucky.
Are they around the main area? You get to spend time with them?
So, some of them are around the main area, but some of them aren't, and that's why I'm so grateful for FaceTime.
Yeah.
I mean, we live in a generation when, you know, we have a lot to complain about, but I mean, in an age when we have so much to complain about, but we also can get to visit with our little darlings and our big darlings that aren't living right close to us just with the click of a button. You know, it's marvelous.
All right. Beam, quick question.
Yeah. Betty, do you have, being that you're a writer and a creative soul, do you have other creative souls in your family that write or maybe do art or are graphic designers?
Well, my granddaughter, she's 25 now. When she was in high school, she was doing a lot of graphic designing, and she won two awards for designing. I think she designed covers for the yearbook or something. So she is very artistic. And, of course, with my grandchildren, I was always reading, writing, and drawing and teaching them painting techniques and so forth. So we were always doing that together. So they'll just have those skills to use either as a hobby or someday to, you know, maybe get into it. Who knows? But it was great having fun times with them and doing those things together.
And you sound like a proud person, too.
Oh, and I I also should say not only that, but during this COVID business with the FaceTime, my little Olivia, she's 7 now, but I think when she was 6, we were doing poetry, and I sent her poetry books, and we were writing poetry and reading poetry, and she's extremely artistic. She loves drawing and painting, and, oh, and my grandson, he must be, oh, my goodness, he's got to be in his late 30s maybe now. Oh, I can't even keep track anymore. Anyway, he's down in Florida right now. He and little Olivia and his wife. But when he was little, he used to make up books for grandma. Little books. Still have them. I have all of this stuff. I'll give them to them someday. But, I mean, who knows what will come of it? You just don't know. But I think that, you know, just exposing them to all of that is great. Because my mother was very artistic. She was a beautiful artist, and also she's really the one who took me to libraries, you know, libraries every Saturday, check out books, read, and do artwork, you know. So I think I think those things are really important as an older generation, whether you're a parent or a grandparent or a neighbor or a babysitter or caretaker, take time to do hands-on stuff with the kids that are in your care, because it's a gift for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And they'll remember it for the rest of their lives too.
Yes, they will.
I know I do. Yeah, really.
Yeah. Okay. Next fast question: hobbies and interests. How do you spend your time other than the kinds of things we've been talking about so far?
Well, let me see here. I wrote a few things down. Of course, reading, writing, drawing, photography. I love just walking in the woods, taking day trips, you know, with all the beauty around us, working in the garden. With the photography, it was a year ago, maybe it was 2 years ago, June 6th. My husband found a newborn fawn out in the field, and I got a beautiful picture of that little fawn. It turned out he had a twin. We watched them all summer. So this is like part of Maine. You know what I'm saying? I mean, why would you live anywhere else? Okay, cooking. That's also cooking. I got into that. I mean, I've always cooked, but I mean real cooking. With all this COVID business, I was baking bread. I made my homemade English muffins, doing all kinds of making nice meals like you'd get at a restaurant, only much better when you cook them yourself, watching these cooking shows. And, I mean, so it's great. And, of course, one of my favorite things is just plain spending time with family. I've got two grown grands that don't live far. One's 25 and one's 22. And, you know, they come over to visit, and we have about a mile of trails through the woods that hubby's, you know, kept up. And when these guys were like, maybe 8, 10, you know, we'd be snowshoeing through the woods, skiing. We'd be, I mean, just enjoying every single season, taking the little trailer out there. And so they're so familiar with that. And so now they can take their significant others and go on these little walks and tell them about all the beauty that's out there that they got to enjoy when they were just little tots.
Wonderful.
So, I mean, it's a wonderful thing. Nature is so wonderful. And, I mean, we are so blessed to have 37 acres and, you know, just a beautiful place to soak in the beauty of the natural world.
Wonderful. Beam, you got a quickie?
Yeah. Now, Betty, have you had any interactions with fans, with readers who have read your book, and what sort of interactions have you had?
Well, I've had a lot of interactions. Let me see. I have a teacher wanted me to come to their classroom to do poetry, but we didn't do that. This was just before, right after my book came out, and she wanted me to come into her classroom to, just talk about poetry. And she's a high school teacher. I didn't get a chance to do that because of COVID. So, you know, down the road we'll work on that. A homeschool, 7-year-old daughter and her mother who also want me to go to their homeschool group and do something, you know, because they just love my book. And let's see, I've got one of my fans was in my yoga class, and she has all of my books, and she's just the sweetest person. She loves all my books. I mean, what could you ask for more from a fan than that, you know?
No.
Those are just a few. Oh, and then also, I should mention that I did during COVID, I did a poetry online class for our local library. This poetry party, it's called Let's Haiku, and the PDF for it is on my blog. So it's right up at the top of my blog, and it's great for, it's a great lesson for if you want to do it as a family, if you want to do it a library, a classroom, you can go to the top of my blog, poetry. You'll see right at the top of my blog all these little things. You've got Amazing Matilda. I've got finger puppets for Amazing Matilda. You can read a chapter in Dog Bone Soup, find out about monarch butterflies. But Poetry Party, Let's Haiku, you can download that. And, you know, it's kind of interactive to learn how to write haiku and all of the different, you know, all of the different parts of writing haiku, writing poetry. So,
great resource.
You know, yeah, so there's great resources. They're free. Just go to the top of my blog and you'll find them. And I hope that you enjoy them. But anyway, doing the poetry party on Zoom for the library was so much fun. Oh my goodness, the kids were having a ball. I was having a ball. And it was just, so I'll be so glad when I can actually get out to the library and we can do this face-to-face.
Yeah. Wonderful. So Betty, do you have any advice for the other authors out there in the audience?
I'd say the best thing that you can do is just to keep reading, keep writing, and just support your local library, support your local authors, get involved in book clubs. You know, there's just so much in local schools. Like I say, libraries are a great place to make connections all around. And also, we have like clubs that utilize the library. They'll come. I should have written that down. I didn't. But anyway, I don't remember what type of group it is. But they'll go to the library once a year to give books out to our local community. It's a freebie thing. And so, of course, I always have books, but I do a presentation and reading and so forth there. So, I mean, there are just so many, there's so many opportunities out there. So just get out there. And library is a great place to start.
Good advice.
Yes, good advice. Now, Betty, how can readers contact you on, you know, social media, blog, website, Facebook, Instagram?
Well, the best place is to go to my website. They can contact me on all those things. The best place to find it is to go to my website. It's the numeral 4 writersandreaders.com. For writersandreaders.com. That's my website blog where you will find what I was just talking about. You know, you'll find free stuff there up at the top. And if you go down to the sidebar, you can sign up for my newsletter. You'll find out, you can click on my books and find them. Let's see what else you can do. Follow me. There's a thing, follow me on Twitter, find me on Facebook. So if you go to my blog, that's the best place to go to find out more about me and connect with me. But it's Betty A. Stevens. So
all
probably
right.
if you author Betty A. Stevens, you'll find all kinds of stuff. You'll find most of my sites.
Terrific. Betty, it's been a treat having you on the show.
Yes, it has. It's, thank you.
It's been a treat being on your show. So thank you. Steve, and thank you, Beam. It's been really great chatting with you and your listeners and those that joined us today. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, cool. Okay, yeah. Next week we're going to have novelist Jason Gwynn on, and then after that, Beam?
June 1st is going to be a special program. This is going to be, Stephen is going to be teaching again, teaching point of view. This is part two. We did a part one some time ago, and this is going to be part two. I think the part one was in January, so this is part two. It's about time to do that, and that's the night that I'm going to be on Meet the Author on the Carter's broadcast. So that's why we won't have a guest here, but this was a good time to get Stephen in for part two on point of view. So June 1st.
And then the week after that, June 8th, we're going to be rerunning the episode with Karen Ingalls, where she promotes the new Learning About Autism book. And she has as her guest on there, Carol Tucker, who we have since lost, but has a lot of remarkable insights about raising children with autism and having to deal with the systems and try to get help and resources for your autistic children too. So that's a rerun episode because we're going to be traveling that week, but it's an excellent episode. We highly encourage you to check it out.
And June 15th, we're going to have a return visit from author Mary Schmidt. She writes memoirs and children's books, and she's always a good interview, so you're going to want to tune in for that one.
Yeah, now we got a few more booked, too. I don't have the dates here. Mark Schultz, can you think of anybody else?
Yeah, Mark Schultz will be on the 22nd. Let me take a look here when I got on the calendar. Well, we're booked through to Mark Schultz, and I have a couple more lined up, but it's not confirmed yet,
okay.
So we're not going to put that out there until those are confirmed.
All right. Well, thanks again to our guest, Betty A. Stevens. It's been a hoot. Check out her books, Dog Bone Soup, Pure Trash, The Story, My Maine, Haiku Through the Seasons, Amazing Matilda, A Monarch's Tale, and The Tangram Zoo and Word Puzzles, too. Go check them out. That's Betty A. Stevens, and make sure you catch it, B-E-T-T-E, when you're out there searching. Thanks for being on the show, Betty.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Betty.
Now, we're going to play one more commercial on our way out, and thanks, listeners. We'll see you next time.
All right. See you next week, everybody.
Thanks.
Fresh Ink Group presents from author Stephen Gies, Been There, Noted That. Essays in tribute to life. Observations, inspiration, remembrance, and noteworthies to share. The simple lives of everyday people in a mundane world prove extraordinary in this collection of 54 personal experience essays by novelist Stephen Gies. The eclectic mix of memoir, commentary, humor, and appreciation covers a wide range of topics, each illustrated by artists and photographers from the Fresh Ink Group. Many of these essays have appeared in other book anthologies such as Chicken Soup or in popular magazines, newspapers, websites, and the author's site, www.stephengies.com. Some appear in this collection for the first time. Some pieces may resonate in ways that touch you deeply. Others might well remind you of people you've known and loved. Some convey direct messages you might want to pass along, such as appreciation for friendship, birthday wishes, and graduation congratulations. Several explore remembrance, a way to share our search for meaning as we grieve. From cautionary tales to poignant pokes at our uniquely human foibles, Gies catches what many of us miss, then considers how we might all share the most poignant of lessons. Been There, Noted That aims to reveal who we are, examine where we've been, and discover what we dare strive to become. Been There, Noted That, Essays in Tribute to Life, is available worldwide in print editions and ebook editions, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Been There, Noted That is proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.